Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
The BC. It is Saturday. Insert date here. And you lucky people. You're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And actually, we have Steve Ray.
And Dennis Worster.
And Michael Oden.
A little bit of a Nick on the air there for us. Thanks for...
It just wouldn't be right... put Fathom at least opening the show.
Yeah. I've got this Nick Cold opening here. It is nice. Saturday, August 3rd, 2013.
That's right.
We are going to do an interesting Sound Bites today. Both Nick and Dave are, one step ahead of the law, hopefully together, so they have mutual support.
But that's okay, because I'm here and I'm wearing my internet pants.
Ooh, you got your 501 technical internet pants?
That's right, with the iPhone pocket right in the front.
iPhone pocket, iPad pocket.
That's right.
27 other different pockets you can put stuff in.
And I'm here, and I'm going to do my best to understand what you're kind of talking about, maybe.
Well, that's why we're here, is to try and make it explainable and understandable to all of our listeners.
We're getting the video up, streaming up and running here. We'll take just a couple of seconds to do that.
Right.
While we're doing that, let me remind you that you can give us a call with your computer questions. And our numbers are toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Or you can call our local number, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 right here in sunny Greece, New York.
That's right.
And it is kind of sunny today.
It's actually pretty nice.
For August, we're sort of winding down the summer a little bit. It's 9 months of cold and then a couple of weeks of nice weather here
right,
in Rochester.
Yeah, a week and a half of just unbearably hot and then fairly nice for a little while. And then suddenly it snaps cold and you say, oh, where did my summer go? And that's where we're at.
Yep. Alrighty, anything interesting in the news this week, Dennis?
Well, one thing that caught my eye, and before I found out that I was coming in, I said, you know... Steve and Nick and Dave should definitely talk about this weekend. It was a news report that Time Warner is increasing their cable modem rental fee. So if you are a Time Warner customer, last fall sometime they instituted a fee of, I believe, $3.99 a month for you to rent your cable modem from Time Warner. Previous to this, there was no fee.
It was part of your $40 a month.
Right. So they said, well, you know, we're continuing to invest in our infrastructure, and therefore we need to make sure that that we can do that, and we're going to charge this fee of $4 a month. I immediately said, nuts to this. I'm going to eBay and buying my own. Thankfully, Time Warner has published a list of acceptable cable modems that you can buy on your own, install them on your own. You will be responsible for them, so you can't call Time Warner if there's an issue with your own cable modem. But that worked out pretty well. So at that point, the rate was $4 a month. So they've just increased it or are about to increase it to $6 a month, which is, in my opinion, way, way more than it ought to be if you're getting charged at all. But I'm sitting back and smiling because as a guy who bought his own and installed it several months ago, it just means that my break-even point is even sooner.
And most people who have had their cable internet service for a while have... pretty old cable routers.
Yeah.
And so this router you've had in your house for probably several years now, suddenly you're paying money on it to rent it that you didn't have to pay before.
That's right. My wife and I were talking about this in the car this morning, and we were saying that, or she said to me, well, and it's not like Time Warner is rolling up a truck in your driveway and handing you a brand spanking new shiny cable modem. They're literally charging you for the stuff that was already in your house.
Yep.
Which was kind of surprising. So that's
no,
the
not
one
really.
Thing
it's just Time Warner.
Well, the one place that I like to visit is that stopthecap.com website. They tend to at least keep me in the know of what's going on.
I'm going to post the article about it.
Yeah. 'Cause
the other thing Time Warner is planning to do is start instituting a monthly bandwidth cap. So how much data can you use for your regular, you know, the typical fee of their $40 a month? And from what we've been reading, the cap is going to be 30 gigs.
So is that a lot or a little?
That's a little. I normally do 100 gigs a month or more. And if you stream movies over the internet, it could be higher. If you play video games over the internet, my son's on his Xbox all summer now, and 100 gigs a month isn't a lot. 30 gigs a month is tiny. And so people may find a higher bill as they use more. One of the things that that Time Warner has said is that 30 gigs a month is 1 million email messages. So no one does 1 million email messages. Yeah. Okay, it's 5 movies.
Right.
Maybe. So
I think a lot of it is. I think a lot of it is. He has to do with there's a lot of cord cutters, and Time Warner is losing a lot of cable customers.
Right, people are cutting down.
They have to make that money up somewhere, and they've chosen the internet to do it because that's where everybody's going.
People are cutting their cable TV plans and just using the internet to watch video.
Right, there's so many options for that now.
Right, Time Warner wants to get paid on both ends, and they're losing customers with cord cutting. And there was actually another article on Stop the Cap about Time Warner is raising the fees on existing customers rather than trying to gain new customers.
Right. It's always easier to make money from the customers you have rather than to try and entice new ones to come in.
Yeah.
So that's a challenge. Yeah, especially when you consider all the different outlets that there are for video. There's services like Hulu, services like Netflix, all of the other streaming services that there are. I know that a lot of the network shows are available online, and it's easy to find video. But even with today's compression rates, where they try and make really high-def video use as little bandwidth as possible, it's challenging to consider that you may be bumping your head on these caps every single month. And it's like they're charging overage fees. So if you go up above this, it's not like they slow you down, they don't throttle it, they don't shut you off. They just start charging.
And hopefully they'll warn you, but we don't know yet what they're going to be doing.
Now, this isn't the first time they've considered doing something like this. This, I think a few years ago, they attempted to do this as well, and then something...
It was a 5-gig limit, and that's where Stop the Cap actually founded, is they were one of the biggest vocal outcries against the 5-gig limit that Frontier was proposing at the time. And they got two of our state senators,
Schumer
and Massa, I think it was, at the time, to get Time Warner to promise that they wouldn't put caps on. Well, that CEO of Time Warner is stepping down at the end of the year, so they don't have to honor his promise anymore.
Yeah, well, that's for the lawyers to figure out, I guess.
But yeah.
And
part of the cable modem fee was they said, that's not a rate hike, because they have to ask the Public Service Commission for a rate hike.
Uh-huh.
So this isn't a rate hike, this is an equipment fee, so we don't have to ask anybody, we'll just put it on you.
Well, I'm sure they've come up with every possible mental gymnastics way it takes to figure out how to extract more revenue.
Now, there is a newer cable standard called DOCSIS 3, or DOCSIS 3, depending on how you pronounce the C or not.
Right.
And if you want the faster cable internet services, the 30, 40, 50 megabit per second that Time Warner does offer for a much higher fee, then you need one of these newer, faster cable modem standards.
That's right.
But for the average person, they don't. And so that old cable modem router that you have...
DOCSIS 2 standard.
DOCSIS 2, DOCSIS 1 maybe even. I remember my old Motorola white router.
Oh, sure.
That I got
big, thick
first.
One.
First, yeah.
I remember those.
Yeah, that was great for 10 megabit, and then they dropped it to 1. But, so you may have some of this old equipment. Now, you can get your own cable router.
Yes.
Decent ones run about $100. If you do want the DOCSIS 3 to be able to support that 50 megabit, then maybe a little more.
Right.
And if you want one that has wireless in it also, so you have one box that does both, a little bit more yet. But when this cable modem fee first got announced, the Motorola router, the SB6141, which was the common one, was going for about $78 on eBay and different stores.
Yep.
Now it's over 100.
Yeah, I remember
so many people.
I shopped around quite a bit, and I went to eBay, and I found a guy who had been selling a lot of these. I'm not quite sure where he was getting them, but they were all perfectly legitimate when they showed up
at my
house.
We don't want to know where he's getting them.
But it was about $95 or so. In fact, I looked it up this morning. And so I was calculating my break-even point, and I am happy to say that even at $6 a month, you can pay down $100 in, 16 and a little bit more months.
Yeah.
So... you know, I have to figure I'm coming up pretty close on my break even. Right.
The danger there is that for, I want to say for the average non-technical home user who just wants to get on the internet, if you have a problem with your internet service, you can call your internet company, and it's their lines, it's their cable router. They
right.
they can give you theoretically more support. If you buy your own router, then they can blame the problem on your router and not help you.
Right.
So that's sort of the trade-off between. It's like I remember when my when I was a kid, the telephone company, you used to rent the telephone in your house.
Right.
And there was a big thing back in probably the 70s now where you would buy your own telephone in your house. Nowadays, we don't use telephones in our house anymore. And I remember
those days.
Our kitchen, we had an old rotary dial telephone, and my mom was so mad that my dad bought that phone from the phone company because it had been in the house for 30 years.
Now, where would you even go to buy a phone? Would they have them at the department store?
At the time, no. So you usually had to either buy the one that you already had from your phone company or the very few department stores that were around. Probably Sears is the only one back then.
Sure.
That's still around now. You might be able to find a phone, but it wasn't that common. And so most people ended up buying the phones in their house, and then that sort of exploded the home telephone market for the next 30 years.
Back to Time Warner, I could totally see them coming up with a plan that says, oh, you don't want to pay $6 a month? Oh, just hand us, you know, $120 up front and we'll forget about the whole thing.
Right.
But you get to keep the same dusty thing that's down in your basement.
Now own our extremely crappy router for the price of
the money
we paid for back when it was new.
Yep. One of the really crazy things is that if you have Time Warner digital phone, then you need the Time Warner router that has internet access and phone access in the router.
Right.
Those are actually hard to find third-party commercially.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you buy your internet router, and then Time Warner stops charging you for the telephone router that they were charging you for yesterday.
Yes. Yes.
And that's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. Pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this was the news story that I found that I definitely wanted to share with the listeners this week.
And the same thing is happening with Frontier DSL. They have been doing it for a lot longer. And I guess that's one of Time Warner's points is, well, the other companies are doing it, so we can too. I think I remember reading from a blog at one of the telephone and cable conferences. People haven't complained about the $4 a month fee. Let's raise it until they complain more.
Well, yeah, they complain by buying their own stuff.
Yeah,
but with DSL, there isn't like a cutoff point on bandwidth. You can use as much as you want.
Yeah,
I know because I have it.
Currently, there's no bandwidth cap for DSL, but there is a modem fee that is probably on your bill. And a lot of people are looking at all these little fees that add up. You see the ad on TV, for $80 a month, you can get internet, phone, and television.
Uh-huh.
And by the time we add all the fees and taxes, it's $150.
Right, right.
or some ridiculous thing like that.
And that adds up. I mean, that's a large part of the average family's entertainment budget to try and factor all those things in. And it just means that you spend less doing other things.
Yep. So it's annoying. So give us a call, 1-800-790-0415 or 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Let us know what you think. Let us know if you did buy your own cable router. In other cities than Rochester, this has been the common for quite a while. And let us know if you have a bandwidth cap in your city and how much you get. If you are a Time Warner customer, you can go to your My Services page on the internet and see what your bandwidth usage is. I'm assuming the same thing is available for DSL. I don't have Frontier, so I can't be sure. But you can see what your bandwidth is and see how much you're actually using. And then don't be swayed by the notes that they give you that's a million emails at 5 gigs a month. You know, it's a million emails or thousands and hundreds of thousands of photos or one movie. Or two TV shows.
Yeah, remember, those are the marketing and lawyers that came up with that. If you need the straight dope, give us a call and we'll help sort things out for you.
Yep.
Yeah, most definitely. That's definitely what we would do, yes.
Yep.
Okay.
So all right.
Here, I've got a question.
Sure.
A client of mine has been having an ongoing issue and I'm trying to figure it out and it's driving me crazy. So he's got a Gmail account. He's had it for a number of years. And he gets messages in that are have been forwarded to him from other people that he gets messages from. And those messages always appear in his trash mailbox on his Mac. He's using Apple's mail.app. And we've been trying to figure out precisely at what point those messages get passed to the trash, but we haven't been able to do it. We've checked to see if he's got rules set up, and he doesn't have any. In fact, we deleted them all. He also doesn't have any coming from Gmail side either. And you know, we can talk about that coming up soon. But it's been a challenge for us to try and figure that out. It only seems to be forwarded messages, and that seems to be the biggest clue we have. We can talk more about that after the break, I guess.
All righty. Coming up just quickly, we'll listen to some of our fine underwriters, and we'll be right back with you on Soundbites on America's member-supported jazz radio station. And welcome back here to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Woden.
And we welcome you back today. Nick and Dave are both out of the office.
Yeah, let's say that.
Out of something, out of their minds, maybe. Out of their minds to leave me running the show.
All we know is they're not here now. So we finally get to run the place.
Run the place ourselves. The animals are loose running the asylum?
Something like that.
Yeah. Before we went to break there, Dennis had a question from one of his customers. About email.
Yeah. So he's got, I'll give a brief recap here. He's got a Gmail account. And I'll try and wrap it to the beat here. No. No, so he's
Mike's
got,
on the phone. He'll get that music down in just a second.
So he's got a Gmail account. He's been receiving messages that are generally forwarded to him, and they are showing up in his deleted mailbox. He uses a Mac. He's on Apple's mail.app program. I believe he's running 10.7, and it's been kind of a challenge. We're trying to narrow it down. He doesn't have any rules in mail.app. He doesn't have any filters in Gmail, and I'm anxious to hear what you might think I should try next.
Yeah, that was the two things you want to make sure. For the rest of us, you can set up a rule in your mail so that, say, if a message comes in from your wife, you know, mark it important or put it in a folder. So you can have these rules that do different things, and you can accidentally set up a rule that says move to the trash.
Right.
So you want to check your local mail program for any rules and your mail server, so at Gmail in this example, to see if there's any rules there.
Right.
There's also a command in the Apple's mail program. I'm never quite sure what it's there for, but there's something that says use this mailbox for.
Uh-huh.
And you can accidentally get the trash selected and say use it for inbox.
Okay.
And so it says, okay, that must be your inbox. So even though it's named trash, the mail program thinks it's the inbox.
So it's just an extra layer of abstraction between your local storage for your messages and the OS and how they're stored.
Right.
Hmm.
So the name of the mailbox is pretty much arbitrary.
Right.
We've just, by convention, the inbox is where your new mail comes in.
Right. Because that's the way it's always been.
Skeuomorphism.
Uh-huh.
So... making sure you check your inbox and make sure that is set to be your inbox. Use this mailbox for in. Since mine already is, I don't have that option in my mail. But that can be an option like that as well. So that's something to take a look at.
Okay.
And probably if that doesn't work, I'd say delete the account and reset up the account.
Yeah, I think that's going to be our next step.
Fortunately, since Google keeps all your mail for you, you don't have to worry about losing any. It will just bring it all back in.
Right. Yep. He does have some from a previous machine that's still stored locally on his machine that we'll have to make sure to back up and restore. But we can do that.
Yep.
And we'll give that a shot and see if we can do that. So it sounds like we need to take our first call. Looks like it's from Steve from Henrietta. Steve, are you there?
Yes. I'm an amateur. I have an iPad and an Apple Extreme.
Okay.
I put in a password so nobody from the outside can get into my iPad.
All right.
How about if somebody comes to visit with an Apple product like an iPod, do they need my password to get in?
Short answer is yes. When you put a password on your network, anyone that you want to access the network has to have that password. So it keeps the bad guys out, but it also keeps the good guys out too. So yes, you would have to give a visitor or guest in your house that password. Now, depending on how old your airport router is, and this is also true of most third-party brand routers as well, there are models that have a guest mode in them. So you can have your own private network with your own password, and you can have a guest network that can only get to the internet. And you can leave that open, or you can put a password on it so that when guests come to your house, you give them a different password so they can't get to any of the stuff on your own network.
I see.
And that's in the airport utility you would use to set up Apple's router, or in the router interface on any other third-party brand router.
Suppose I took my iPad to Staples or the hospital. Sometimes if I go to the hospital, I don't need a password. How does that work?
Two things. The hospital can have an open network that doesn't require a password. And a lot of places will do that, bookshops, coffee stores, things like that, to encourage patrons to come to that store. The other thing is that when you enter a password in, so if your network does need a password, you type it into your iPad.
Right.
And the iPad then remembers that. So right. When you go back to that same place again, it doesn't ask you for that password again because it already knows it.
Okay. But sometimes, like a hospital, doesn't require a password.
Right, they'll have an open network for visitors there, and then they have a private password protected network for their own internal hospital stuff.
Okay. Oh, thank you very much.
You can usually tell that if you go into your iPad under Wi-Fi or other Wi-Fi devices, if there's a little padlock icon next to the name of the Wi-Fi network, that means it's locked and needs a password. And if there's no little padlock, that means it's open and you can get in without a password.
Oh, thank you very much.
Sure, you're very welcome.
Right. Thanks for calling, Steve. Yeah.
We're seeing more and more people now with their mobile devices and going places. And that used to be the big thing about the coffee shops would have come in, buy coffee, use our free Wi-Fi.
Right.
Although, interestingly enough, there have been a few cases around where coffee shops will sue someone who sits in the parking lot using the Wi-Fi. Because they didn't come in and buy the coffee.
I'm sorry.
So
that sound was my eyes rolling.
Yeah. And technically, that is illegal. Using someone's network without their permission is a federal crime.
Yeah.
The fact that the radio waves got to your car apparently doesn't matter to the law.
No.
And if there's no password on the network, that doesn't matter either. You didn't ask permission because the sign in the wall says Wi-Fi is for patrons only.
Right.
So go in, buy your cup of coffee. And then get your Wi-Fi.
That's right. It's a small price to pay.
Yeah, you often see that in restaurants and bars too, where you have to go up to the bar to order your drink and get your password.
Hmm. It sounds like we've got another call on the line.
Is that Bodan?
Yeah.
All right, Bodan from Rochester. Hi, Bodan. What can we do for you?
Hey, my machine has been acting up the past week, and I thought I was infected with some kind of virus or maybe something even in the registry. So I want to get your idea. It is an older machine. I'm running XP Home Service Pack 3. My memory is maxed out at 2 gigs. So, I mean, it still works fine, other than something. A couple of weird things have been happening. One of them is that I have all three browsers on my machine, Google, Mozilla, and Internet Explorer. But when I was opening up the Google Chrome program, all of a sudden, my floppy drive would make noise, like something was activating it, and nothing was inserted in the floppy drive.
That's interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah, what it could be is when in your browser, you can set a home page that is usually a website, HTTP:// whatever. Right. You can actually tell your browser to open a file every time it opens, and that file. You could have accidentally typed in a colon. So say you were looking for Apple, APPLE. If you typed in a colon, PPPLE, then it would try to go to your A drive.
Yeah. Well, right now I actually have no home page, so it just comes up clean.
Yeah, I'm doing a quick Google search here, and I see that there is an issue related to Chrome with working on this. And as late as July 12th, they had posted that they were indeed working on this issue. And they didn't have a lot of details. I'm reading through it now, but it was surprising. If you disable the floppy drive in Hardware Manager, and if you don't really need it, then it clearly won't make that noise anymore because Windows won't even know about it.
But you know what? I ran a security tango, and other than super anti-spyware picking up tracking cookies, it generally came up clean. And I also have another program, CCleaner, which I actually think is a real good program also. Cleaned out all the files there, removed all the temporary internet files, rebooted it, and now no problem opening up Google Chrome.
Right. Yeah, the issue is number 234318 with Chrome. They've got it in their bug tracking system, and they are working on it. So it's a bug with Chrome itself.
Machine.
No,
yeah.
Not your machine. If you Google for the phrase Chrome accessing floppy drive,
okay,
you'll get a number of hits back, and the top ones are from Google themselves, noticing that this is an issue.
The other side issue is that, again, having an older machine, I was running the Avast program as my free antivirus program that was running in the machine. Well, the latest version of Avast, which has a lot of features in it, that cloud stuff and everything, I just noticed that it was slowing down my web surfing, that pages weren't loading fast. And somebody suggested to download the Microsoft Essentials antivirus program, which I did, and then I removed Avast. Microsoft has been running good, but also within the last couple of weeks, and I thought maybe this was related. Sometimes when I'm away for 24 hours, I turn off my computer completely. I'll turn it back on, and all of a sudden on the taskbar on the bottom, their symbol shows up red, that you're not protected. It's not until I click update or do a quick scan will it then come up green that I am, you know. Does that sound weird to you guys?
That sounds fairly normal. Two issues, back to the Avast. Slowing down caused by the virus scanner has been an issue for years in all the virus scanners. Enright frequently says that they stopped recommending Norton antivirus because it got so slow it just bogged your computer down to death.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually a case of creeping featureitis.
That
the program, the companies need to add more and more features to make their program more attractive than the other programs, and eventually it just everything bogs down and gets too slow. That's one of the reasons why we generally recommend just a plain vanilla antivirus program rather than their whole suite of stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But
can you do that with Avast?
Well, I haven't looked that detailed into the newest Avast. I know that all the Avast and what's the other one that we like?
AVG.
AVG, yeah. They both have their commercial suite versions, and then they have antivirus only. But if one isn't working for you, it's easy enough to switch to the other one. And then we've also gotten some interesting criticism of Microsoft Security Essentials lately, that Microsoft has kind of fallen behind on the speed and veracity of its virus checkers. Every few months, several of the magazines do ratings of, mm-hmm. of the different virus checkers, and Security Essentials used to be really good, and now it's sort of fallen down toward the bottom again. But it's better than nothing. And it doesn't seem to use up much cycles, which is one of the nice parts about it.
Yeah, that's what I noticed once I removed and stopped using Avast and started using the Microsoft Essentials. I am having a little more, you know, snap, crackle, pop into my surfing the internet.
Yep. Yeah, you might want to try uninstalling Avast. If you go to avast.com/uninstall-utility, they have a tool that will help you pull out all of the previous installations of Avast, and then you can do a clean installation and see if that helps too.
Okay, I used what Dave Enright recommends.
The Revo uninstaller.
Revo uninstaller.
But as for the Security Essentials icon being red, I see that a lot. What I have thought is happening is that while Security Essentials is booting, it isn't booted yet, so you're vulnerable. So when you boot your computer for the first time, Security Essentials hasn't finished starting yet, so you are vulnerable, so it's red. Once it finishes starting and checks your update notices, it will see if you're up to date or not and then turn green.
Okay.
So if you just waited another minute or so without doing a scan or an update, it would probably turn green by itself.
Okay.
I think it's erring on the side of caution that we're not fully running yet, so you're not fully protected yet.
All right.
But
I was just concerned that maybe I got a bad virus, which wasn't coming up, you know, by running the Tango program. That was like deep somewhere in my registry and you know, hidden.
And that's one of the advantages of running the Tango is that you can run some of the other antivirus programs just in case. Because as we've always said, no one program can catch everything.
Now, would you recommend, for example, me downloading the Avast or AVG, which you guys recommend on the Security Tango website, and not just activating it, and then turn off, unplug from the internet, turn off Essentials, and open up and run the other program?
That's not a bad thing to try. Before you go to that pain, though, there are several companies that have online scanners. So it actually runs a program in your browser to scan your local computer, so you don't have to install the antivirus.
Are these free programs?
Yep, there are free online scanners. I think Avast and AVG both had them. The downside of that is that website has to look at every file on your hard drive.
Uh-huh.
And so there's kind of a trust issue there, and theoretically, the people running that website could see the data in your files. It's not likely going to happen because that data is not going out to the internet.
There's nothing that they can't. There's nothing that they see that the NSA won't. So you know what?
Okay.
Right. That was actually with the Joy of Tech this week, where the wife wakes husband up in the middle of the night. I hear a prowler downstairs, and so he grabs his computer and starts Googling black helicopters, Prism, NSA,
right.
And she's yelling, "What are you doing? Call 911!" No, don't worry about it. And the SWAT team busts on their door.
Yes. All right, you've given me some. Give me a name or two of the online scan programs that you mentioned.
I know ESET has one.
ESET?
ESET, yep. Trend Micro has one. I think, here's Kapersky says it has one. I think AVG and Avast also have online scanners, so you don't actually have to install the software first.
Uh-huh.
It's a good thing to run every now and then.
All right. Okay, you've given me some insight. Thank you very much, guys.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
That's always a big issue. And yeah. And for us Mac users, too, it's not something to take too lightly. You should have an antivirus program on your Mac as well, and we'll talk a little bit more about that after these fine messages from our sponsors. Give us a call here on member-supported Jazz 90.1, 1-800-790-0415. Or 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. And we'll be right back. And good afternoon again. Here we are. It's about 45 minutes past the hour on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And we're back again with the more questions. We'll get back to the phones in a second. We just had a question from Bodan about a possible virus on his PC.
Right.
And I did want to mention for us Mac users, it's not something you need to just brush off again. There may not be that many Mac vulnerabilities or Mac viruses, but you can frequently...
Yet.
Well, they always say yet, but it's been, 20 years now? And 10 years since the modern OS X.
Well, if you like to be protected, there are some things you can do.
And one of the things that I've been seeing a lot lately is a lot of Windows viruses are coming in my email. I use the free Sophos antivirus for Mac users. There's also AVG and Avast and Symantec has one. A lot of free Windows Mac antiviruses from the same companies that have PC ones.
Sure. The ClamAV is too.
ClamAV is nice.
Nice and free.
And I'll get a message, an email message, and it's always some fake sender, undeliverable return or invoice attached or something like that. And there's a file attached, and in that file is a Windows virus. It can't do anything on my Mac, but if I would have forwarded that message on to a Windows user, they could be infected. So my antivirus keeps popping up on me all the time. This message is infected. This message is infected. And I go, thank you, and delete. so it's not something that we can ignore on the Mac world. You can be a carrier of a Windows virus, and you want to make sure that you're being a good net citizen and not passing those along as well.
That's right. And in general, those are pretty easy to find. I can figure out who the spammers and who the 519 Nigerian Prince scammers who are trying to get info are. The only time that I remember ever getting caught was when it was from somebody that I didn't know, but it was seemed reasonable, mm-hmm. and the subject line was, "Our server is down."
Yeah,
and as a part-time system administrator and full-time consultant, that's a message that gets my attention. And I almost chuckled to myself when I popped it open and read the subject. I'm sorry, the body of the message, because it was clearly something that I didn't need to worry about. But it was amazing that I said, "Hey, you know, I got caught by this, and I'm usually pretty up to speed with these kinds of things."
Yep. So you have to be wary of that. That usually the phishing scams in your email goes along with you get a message from Citibank or PayPal saying there's a problem on your account. Don't click there.
Please right.
Don't click there. So even the Mac users can get viruses. And there's fake virus messages that pop up. And there's a new class we've been talking about called ransomware.
Yeah.
Where you get a message on your screen from the FBI.
Allegedly.
Allegedly from the FBI saying that your computer has been locked.
They're shaking their finger at you.
Shaking their finger at you.
You're in trouble.
You need to pay a fine, and so go to your local Western Union and buy a money pack.
Yeah, there's actually two versions of that. There's the FBI version, and then there's a UK version as well.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So it's global now. And so the irony is that the people are falling for this.
Right.
That's not the right word. They're being tricked by this.
They're
convinced and sending a money pack money order from Western Union to the government.
Okay, first of all, Western Union's still around?
Yeah.
And what's a money pack?
Right, yeah. So it's a special type of money order.
Yeah, where they can verify that the funds will actually come over and they can't be...
And the thing about Western Union money pack and pretty much any sending money like that is the person at the other end almost doesn't have to show any ID.
Uh-huh.
Because you're sending it to an address, not a person.
Right.
And so that's been the big thing about sending cash Western Union. Yeah, you can send cash to somebody who's standing there waiting, and he could be a bad guy.
He could be who you expected or not.
In fact, that was a scam a couple years ago got really popular. You know, hi, Uncle Ralph, I'm stuck in the London airport.
Right,
you know,
I remember this.
I've lost my passport. Please wire me $1,000 so I can come home.
Right.
And a lot of people have, you know, use a generic name. This is Steve, you know, and people get tricked into it.
Oh, no, Bob's in trouble.
Yeah.
Quick, send up some money. Yeah.
So these ransomware viruses are now extorting up to $5 million a year, according to this report.
Nice.
From people. But there was an interesting report that came out that a Washington, D.C. man a couple weeks ago turned himself into the cops because he was downloading child porn and got one of these ransomware messages.
Oh, no.
And believed it enough that he actually, instead of just paying the fine, turned himself into the cops.
His conscience caught up with him.
Yeah.
And so figured that was the best way out.
Very few details of the case now because it's still pending investigation.
Right.
But, so he got the ransomware and turned himself in.
Hmm. Somewhere the FBI's going, "This is a horrible virus. This is a horrible virus. We got to stop it." Yeah, maybe not.
Hey,
yeah.
What's that? Who's that guy on the phone?
Yeah. Well, there have been some interesting things that police have done in the past. I've seen shows about them where they'll have a list of... criminals,
right?
It's usually people with outstanding bench warrants or unpaid child support, something like that, and they don't know where the guy is, but they have their last known address,
right?
So they'll mail them
I've
a letter. You've won a brand new big screen television,
right? Or a boat,
or this or that, or a cash prize, and just show up at this address on this time and claim your prize,
right?
And
meanwhile,
the cops are there waiting for you.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Well,
I actually had one this week. My wife almost fell for it. It was a giant poster in the mail with a car key on it.
Yes.
From one of the local car dealers. And it said, "You have definitely won, you know, $50,000 or this."
In small type, right. It's a chance to.
Well, that. And one of them said, you know, you scratch your thing off, and if you get three in a row, you have definitely won one of the following prizes.
Yes.
And one of them was a golden, that's what my thought. It said a gold coin.
Uh-huh.
And in the little tiny picture was a golden dollar.
Oh, I see. Like a Sacagawea dollar?
A Sacagawea dollar, the new presidential dollars, yeah.
Right.
So I'm thinking, that's not a gold coin. That's a golden coin.
Yeah, yeah.
Would have been a little more... technically correct.
Get my lawyer on the phone.
Yeah. And and so at the very tiny fine print value, $2.
Right.
So yeah, they'll get me into the store. So yeah, so,
you get a toonie?
Yeah. So if you put your key in the lock and the engine starts, you win the car,
uh-huh.
or you win any of these other prizes, or you know, one of the prizes has a $2 cash value. You win. In fact, I think it was gold coins, plural.
So they give you
two gold coins.
Yes, which will just about cover the gas that you spent to get to the dealership and back.
Yeah. All righty. So let's move back onto the phones. Did that say Walter?
Wayne.
Alrighty. So, that's a Y, not a T.
Yeah.
Wayne from Rochester. How you doing today? What can we do for you?
Hey, Steve. It's Wayne.
Hey, Wayne. How you doing?
All right. About the cable modems.
Yep.
I got my cheesy modem that Time Warner gives me.
Okay.
So yep. I looked underneath it, got the model number, went online, and they're selling those at Amazon for like $25.
Amazing.
So, right, the old crappy modem that you probably have for years.
Yeah.
If that works fine for you, you don't need anything faster than that, then that's a good idea. What model number is it? Do you remember offhand?
I don't remember. It was a 10C something. But it's on the bottom, and you just punch it in. I Googled it, punched it in, and Amazon had them for like $25.
Cool. Wow. $25. You could probably get it with Prime shipping, I bet. And it'll be at your house in a couple of days. And then by, the fifth month, you're already ahead of the game.
Yep.
Yeah. But then I went online. I looked at their Time Warner's list, and I got one. And I went online. And I got one of their Netgear ones, the CG3000D, which can do everything, basically up to turbo and extreme and everything.
Good.
And I went on eBay looking for them, and brand new on eBay, they're for a buy it now price of $50.
Wow. Yeah, those prices must have come down.
It even has Wi-Fi.
Very nice.
Yeah. So you can, if you look hard enough. You don't even really have to look really hard. But if you look, you can get them for like $50-$60, and the Motorola ones that they had were about $70-$80.
Yeah, Motorola tends to be the biggest name and therefore the most expensive ones. So some of the lower brands might be even cheaper.
Yeah. So the Netgear one, well, I ordered it last night, so I don't know. I'll probably get it next week. I'll plug it in and see if it works.
Cool.
Yeah. Definitely call us back and let us know how that works out for you.
Yeah. Cool. I just want to let you guys know.
All right. Awesome. Thanks.
Thanks, Wayne.
Yep. See you later.
Yep.
Bye.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, if you can do 5 minutes worth of homework and end up making an investment that pays off within 5 months, there are a lot of people on Wall Street that would love to have a 5-month payoff on an investment like that.
Yeah.
So it seems like you're ahead of the game.
Yep. It's always always interesting with eBay and Amazon that eBay started selling basically used crap that used to be garage sale, and Amazon was all new stuff.
Right.
And now it's been swapping back and forth. You get new stuff on eBay and you get used stuff on Amazon. And I don't like that. When I'm searching for this thing, I want to only search for new, or I want to only search for used.
Right.
I also have to go into the advanced search and check the button on it.
That's right. And one of the checkboxes I noticed recently, and I haven't bought things that much, they've added a thing for sold items. So if you're looking to sell something and you've got it there in front of you and you're doing your research on, well, what have other people sold this for recently?
I'm trying to
value
it.
Used to be you have to click on the completed listings, and that would give you a listing of things that actually sold and things that didn't sell. And you'd have to scroll through all of those and try and get a sense of what the true value of the item is.
For a while, though, the red ones hadn't sold and the green ones had sold. So that helped a little bit.
It did. Yeah, they finally color-coded it, and only recently have they added an additional checkbox to show you just the things that have sold, and that makes life so much easier for people who sell things somewhat infrequently and are doing them one or two at a time.
Yeah, we get that a lot at our store. People want us to sell their old computers for them, and we have to know what their value is. So we'll look on eBay, see what they've been selling for. We look at what a new model costs and sort of work our way backwards, and that's sort of it's usually the way. How much is it? It's whatever the market will bear. It's
right.
How much can you ask before someone complains?
Right. Yeah. And you know, you guys have to make money if you're taking the time to list things as well.
Yep.
So they have to factor that overhead in as well. So that's a challenge. So do you get a lot of people that are looking to do kind of this trade-in model?
Quite a bit, yeah. Quite often, people will just pass their computers down the family. But we do have pretty good sales in used machines. We have them on our website at mac-av.com. It's usually computers they bought from us in the first place.
Right.
It's because we have generational customers.
Which is nice.
Which is nice, yeah. It's always nice to have the customer loyalty to a local business. So they come back and buy their next computer, and we sell the last one for them. And Wow. And works out pretty nice. Although a lot of our stuff is really old.
Right.
One of the things we've seen in the Mac community is people tend to keep their computers longer. So most of our used computers are in the 2006, 2007 range.
Uh-huh.
And not to mention all our old PowerPC machines that we've given up on.
Right.
But so, okay, if you need an old PowerPC machine to run an OS 9 program, give us a call. We have quite a few.
That's right. That's your place to
usually,
go.
Which is usually, we've got some ad agencies.
Liquidation sale or something, yep. Just to get rid of them.
That's right.
We have some ad agencies that are still running very old software.
Yeah.
Because some of the commercial software, even
it's
RIPs.
Expensive.
Even RIPs, you know, it might be 10 grand to buy a new RIP for your printer.
Sure.
Because you've got a new computer.
Or 4 or 5 grand for any artist machine. Once you factor in the cost of the software, it really, really goes up.
Yep. So it's an interesting thing within the used equipment, and buying it locally where you know where it came from is a lot better than somebody random on the internet. In fact, I try to tend to buy my used stuff from Craigslist so I can physically see it before I give them the money.
Right. Yeah. That way you have a rough idea of what you're getting yourself into.
Alrighty, that music tells us that you again have wasted an hour today on Saturday morning listening to us here. But don't fret, we have another hour yet to waste.
Yay!
Here on Soundbites. We're on member-supported Jazz 90.1. You can listen to our live stream at jazz901.org. We also have video running at our website, soundbites.org. And you can watch the video as well. Our phone number is 1-800-790-0415, toll free, or 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Give us a call. Let us know how you're doing today, what your cable modem plans are, if you have any questions. And we will see you all right after this short break from our underwriters.
To America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back, everyone.
It's the top of the hour.
Top of the hour, and I forgot Nick's spiel again.
he rattles that off.
He rattles it off. Yeah,
perfectly every time.
People think he has it written down
week.
In front of him. No, he just rattles
it off.
He closes
his eyes,
his
and boom, it's out.
It's still Saturday, August 3rd. We are Soundbites. I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worcester.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And we are hurtling headlong into the second hour.
That's right.
Of Soundbites here on this fine Saturday.
Yep.
And on the phone, we have Dar from Toronto. Hi, Dar. How you doing?
How's it going, gentlemen?
Pretty good.
Hello.
Just a quick word for Bohdan, and that's how you pronounce it in Ukrainian. You pronounce the H.
Okay.
And the AV dilemma he's encountered, and also for the Mac users as well. Why not try Clam AV?
Yep. Yeah, that's a very nice free AV program.
He might want to go to Wikipedia and get the load down there.
Yep.
That's a good thing to do.
One thing I have...
It's no frills, right? It's what you see is what you get. There's no crap, extra crap on it.
Yep. Yeah, the Mac version is Clam X AV for OS 10. One thing I have noticed with Clam is it's not as polished...
Yeah,
as some of the commercial programs, and for very novice users, that can be a big difference.
But that's what I thought, but went to Wikipedia, and it turns out there's a GUI for Windows users.
Oh, nice.
Hmm.
Who would have thought, eh?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's the nice thing about open source software. Clam AV is part of is an open source project, which is basically means a bunch of guys got together and decided to write a program and let anyone else see the source code and figure out and help what was going on with it.
Right, and figure out ways to improve it.
Right,
or
so
ways to add features.
Yeah, if somebody finds a problem, they'll fix it. If someone wants to add a feature to it, they can. So it's a very nice way to do software. It's interesting. There's a huge community called FOSS, Free and Open Source Software, that is basically postulating that all software should be free until you go to their day job and they want to sell you something.
Well, free as in price or free as in being able to see the source?
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of what we see in mostly in the Unix community, because that was sort of the very first operating systems, and if someone wrote a program, anyone else could use it too. And since the Mac is based on Unix, we see a lot of that in the Mac world too.
Right.
But most of those open source Unix programs have been rewritten for Windows as well. And in fact, Clam even has a VMS version for DEC computers.
Nice. And still got that floating around.
Yeah, Ecom Station. Haven't heard of the Ecom Station, whoever they are.
Say, Dar.
Oh, it's an OS too.
Dar, we've got you on the phone here, and you're calling from Toronto, is that right?
Yes, sir.
So, do you have a cable modem connection in where you live?
Yes.
It is your provider, Rogers, probably?
Yep.
Okay. Are they requiring you to have a data cap?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I hear that that's much more common in Canada than it is here presently.
Oh, yeah.
So what strategies are you using to make sure that you don't go over your cap?
Just don't go overboard.
Okay.
And YouTube is at the lowest rate, that's all.
Uh-huh. So you don't do the high-definition video as much, and you monitor what you're using and remain conscious of how much data you're using every month, it sounds like.
And that's the annoyance of it. You have to say, do I want to watch this movie tonight, and do I have the bandwidth available on my service?
You got to look at your calendar and say, well, when does that reset?
Well, you just go lower resolution.
Yep.
That's all.
Okay. Yeah. Do you know what your cap is?
Oh, I can't remember offhand.
Okay, no problem. So it sounds like that there are reasonable steps that people can take, even if there were caps instituted that would help you extend the amount of items you could watch in a given time period, and that it's not completely the end of the world. It's just something you have to be careful of.
Yeah, and it's the catch-22 that Nick mentions, that the mobile companies, Apple in the iPad and Google in their tablets, and you can watch videos and you can download music and you can download apps and you can do all this and you can do all that until you reach your bandwidth cap.
Right.
And accidentally, download a movie on cellular instead of Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And we hear a lot of stories about that, especially here in the Northeast where you're close to Canada. We can accidentally get a Canadian cell tower bounce.
Oh, nice.
And I used to run into that with my cell phone. And, I dial a phone number and I get a Canadian operator asking, who are you trying to call? And, well, no, I'm not calling Canada. We hear stories of the same thing about San Diego with people bouncing into Tijuana.
Wow.
There was a story about a guy that got a $6,000 cell phone bill for downloading WALL-E for his kid when he was on vacation in Cancun and didn't realize.
That also happens in Canada around the Vancouver Taylor. Mm-hmm, there was a story on cbc.ca not like too while back that somebody that had TELUS, which is a service up there, was hooking into, I think it was AT&T signal, and he got like a $5,000 bill because he was on AT&T's tower and it was considered roaming.
Right.
Wow.
In international roaming, which is even worse. In fact, there was a story last week about a guy in Windsor, Ontario that got drunk and swam across the river to Detroit and got arrested for illegally entering the country without a passport.
Wow.
Yeah. So, we sometimes forget that Canada's another country because you're so close to us.
Well, we don't, because none of our shipping, you order something from the States, and you guys get free postage. We don't.
Well, it's
but you get free health care, and we don't.
Yeah. Well, and I see when we drive up to Toronto, you go through Niagara Falls and Buffalo, and you see big signs everywhere, U.S. addresses. So you cross cross the river, get a U.S. post office box, and now you can ship stuff to the U.S. for free.
Right. You just got to tell the border the border guy. Yeah, how much? I'm going to go check my mail.
How much can you bring in without declaring it? That's the other question.
I'm sure they'll tell you.
Speaking of big bucks.
Yeah.
What about Ubuntu Edge?
Hmm.
Now, if Gatesy attempted something like this, do you think, now right now, on the 24th of July, they had $5 million raised. And right now, the coffers have $8 million.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. So they've been crowdfunding a dual boot smartphone that can also run as a desktop computer, running the Ubuntu OS, which is a variant of Linux. And it is really, really popular, at least among the geeks, and is completely blowing away all of its targets. So according to the thing in The Guardian I'm reading from a few hours ago, it looks like it's going to miss its 32 million crowdfunding target, but boy, it really looks like something that'd be really, really impressive if they could find a way to do that.
Yeah, and all of us idiots that contributed, we get our money back. But the whole point is, it's so audacious, so much chutzpah that that Shuttleworth has shown.
Yep. That's right. Yeah, it sounds like they need another $24 million with 20 days to go. So they need to get just over $1 million a day. So tell all your friends and see what they can do there. So
that was one of the points of Android, is that Google was making this Android OS for free that companies could put on their cell phones and not have to pay for the OS level. But most of the cell phone companies put their own stuff on top of it so that you have to pay for it anyway, and when Google updates Android, it takes months or sometimes years to get down to all the cell phones, so that hasn't worked out the way it was intended originally. So let's hope that this
Edge,
yeah, Ubuntu Edge. Yeah, so they need $8 million left.
Yeah.
But here's the craziest thing of all. He's got the nerve to put down you give us $80,000 a year bucks and we'll send you 100.
Nice. Oh, 100 of the phones.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, here it is. Yeah, if you pledge $80,000, you get 100 phones.
Wow.
Or if you pledge $10,000, you get one of the first 50 phones.
Some very
phones.
Exclusive. Yep. Wow. Yep. That's incredible.
And 6 people have claimed that one. 6 people have donated $100,000.
Well, Steve, as much fun as it's been talking to Dar, I think we've got a few other calls lined up.
Okay.
They're starting to
pick up. Thanks a lot, Dar.
Thanks. But thanks for giving us a call.
Sure, yep. All righty. Well, Mike is pushing some more buttons to get the next caller online.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. A crowdsourced cell phone operating system based on an existing Ubuntu. That's pretty neat. And we'll have to see how well they do in another 19 days.
All right. So it looks like we've got our next call from here in Rochester. It looks like it says Pani. Is that right?
Thank you for the pronunciation.
Yes.
Hi. It was a very informative first hour, and this last call was too. So I think I may have a combination of related question, but the first thing first, I think I have an iCloud problem.
Okay.
I have a laptop, pretty old, but managed to struggle along. I also have an iPhone 5 and an iPad. All these three gadgets are on iCloud.
Okay.
And it's just lately seems to be that my iPad and iPhone, they are talking to each other. But my address book, that's the one I am mostly concerned about, doesn't seem to fill up on my laptop. Now, typically I fill in new addresses, of course, as I'm meeting with people, et cetera, on my iPhone.
Okay.
So I back up my iPhone maybe once a week, so I do my iPad also. I don't think I have to manually back up this laptop, do I? Because it says it syncs automatically.
Yeah, you mentioned you have an older laptop, and depending upon which operating system version, and Steve, feel free to chime in, iCloud may not be fully compatible depending upon how recent your laptop is.
Yeah, you need system 10.7, I think 0.2 or later.
It used to be okay pretty well until maybe 2-3 months ago, at which point I started to have some internet problems with Frontier. I don't know if I was supposed to say that. But anyway, I called them up. They said they told me, oh, you have a very old modem, so they sent me a new one.
Great.
And if you can go from bad to worse, I did. I can hear you smirking.
Yes. So, sometimes new isn't better.
And I tell you, for the last month, I don't know how many times I called Frontier. It just keeps on cutting out on me. So I don't know if these three things somehow interfere with each other. Just now, I just backed up again my iPad. I have restarted my laptop 2-3 times, thinking that restarting will, you know, pick up on the address book, and nothing. So I specifically picked a few addresses I put in lately in my iPhone, and they haven't been picked up by my Google address.
So, yeah, intermittent and failing internet connections can cause this sort of problem where the laptop can't get to the internet to check the iCloud. I would try to get Frontier to give you another new modem if they haven't already.
I have Frontier DSL, and sometimes mine will do that to me, not as often as you, but it'll do that to me. I would go to the modem. There should be a button on the back that turns it off.
Yeah,
I tell you, I
even know by heart by my IP number and, you know, what you have to put in the address book when the tech guys are, you know, testing it. 192 point whatever, you know. And incidentally, lately I had a lot of communication problem between my printer as well.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just too strange at all, and a sudden everything,
it's too much
coincidence that everything is going wrong.
It does sound like that new Frontier modem has a problem itself.
What I would generally do for a client who called me who was having these types of symptoms is I would tell them to get onto their laptop, go to their web browser, whether that's Safari or Firefox or Chrome, and go to the iCloud.com website.
Where to go?
Go to iCloud.com.
Yeah, I did that.
Yeah,
okay.
Log in with your credentials, whatever your iCloud account is, and hit the address book there. That is kind of what Apple knows about your address book. Then I would go to each individual device, your phone, your tablet, and your Mac, and create a dummy address for a fictional person and wait to see if those synchronize. Go back to the website and see if those changes occur.
I do that on the laptop.
Yeah, start on the laptop and use that to monitor the changes. Start by making somebody new on your Mac in the address book and then see if it shows up on the web page. Then if that works fine, then go to your phone. And if that works fine, go to your iPad and kind of comb through any issues you have on each individual device.
My iPad and my iPhone, they work together.
That's good.
I mean, knock on wood, I didn't have any problem there.
Yeah. So if that doesn't work and the laptop is not getting the right addresses, one of the things you can do is you go into your
system. Buy a new computer.
Well, yeah, there's that.
It's but always fine.
If you go into System Preferences under iCloud and turn off address book syncing.
Temporarily.
And then reboot the computer and then go back into the iCloud System Preference and turn address book back on. And then that will tell that computer to go back out to iCloud and resync all the addresses.
I should still chase after Frontier because things are just not working. Last time I called, they were supposed to send out somebody actually to the house to look, but nobody showed up, and then I had to travel and what. So anyway, but it's just so annoying. I could be at the middle of transaction, I lose the internet, and things are just not communicating between each other.
Yeah, it does sound like there's something wrong with that router.
Yeah, that's their router.
Yep.
And before that, I had my own router.
That's one of the things about buying your own router is that...
Then I am responsible for
it. You're responsible for it, yeah. So if it's their router, they will come back in and...
Well, it's a modem with a built-in router.
Right, yep. Yeah. And sometimes they can have wireless in it also, so you just have one box that does everything.
In Rochester, we basically don't have any other option but the two well-known company to have internet connection in my
There's
residence.
A third, well, those third are th- one coming, I believe.
Well, those are the two biggest companies. There's another one called Green Light, I think it is.
Yes, that's right.
But I don't think it's available everywhere.
It's not available everywhere yet. And their big thing is they're super fast.
They're fiber optic.
They're fiber. So they do 100 megabit or 1,000 megabit. So they're a lot faster. It's more for businesses. And then you can always get satellite internet, but that's often more expensive.
It's really expensive.
No, I don't have
areas.
Even with the TV, I never did have the best reception.
Yep. You can also go with a company like Earthlink that has offices in Rochester. They do both DSL and cable internet.
I don't have to have a phone line, right?
You pay a little more if you don't have a phone line to get what it's usually called naked DSL. And they basically resell Frontier and Time Warner, but it can often be at a lower price than you can get from the company itself.
All right. Okay, but yeah, well, I'll try all these things then. Thank you so much.
Sure, you're very welcome.
Thanks for giving us a call.
Yep.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That is one of the big problems, is that in most cities, there's only two choices for internet.
Right.
The telephone company and the cable company.
We call that a duopoly.
Yeah. Some cities have another telephone company where you might have two phone companies you can go to. And a lot of times, there'll be smaller internet providers. I know a lot of people use Blue Frog out in Newark area and Palmyra. They're are they in Macedon, Palmyra, one of those. So out in their area, there's another company. But that music tells us that it's time to take another underwriting listenership here.
That's right.
We'll be getting to our phones in just a minute. Give us a call, 1-800-790-0415 or 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. And we are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And welcome back to Soundbites on Jazz 90.1. I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Loden.
And we are here, what is it? We're on the fifth, third?
Sure.
No, fourth, third. We have 2/3 left.
Okay.
It's about 25 minutes after the hour. How's that?
Yeah, love those fractions.
Love those fractions, yes. And on the phones, we have Joanne from Greece, New York. How are you doing today? What can we do for you?
Fine. I'm having problems with the cloud, and all my things were synced, and now all of a sudden I started having problems with Microsoft Word. A lot of my documents had been automatically saved into the cloud. I am confused between Google Docs and iCloud. And
yeah, every company has its own cloud services. Which service are you using?
I honestly don't know if I have. I might be using both. Maybe that's where I'm having problems.
Well, yeah, each service is used for different things. Google Docs allows you to write documents on the internet. You can also have Google Drive on your computer, so it synchronizes your files to other computers. Apple's iCloud service is for syncing contacts and calendar information between your devices, your computers and your iPhones and your iPads.
What was that one called?
That's Apple's iCloud.
See, that's where I'm getting mixed up. Yeah.
And so iCloud can sync some documents, but it only syncs Apple's documents from Pages, Keynote, and Numbers.
Okay.
Then Microsoft has their own syncing service called SkyDrive, and that lets you synchronize files between your computers through the Microsoft service. And then Microsoft has their online Office 365, docs.com. Where you do your documents online. So there's sort of two halves of it. There's doing a document in a web browser, and then there's doing documents on your computer.
That are then saved to someplace
synced.
That is not your computer.
Right. So it can be a little bit tricky depending on what you're trying to accomplish. Normally with syncing is you want to see the same documents on multiple computers.
Yes.
And you would use a service like either Google Drive or SkyDrive or Dropbox as another common cloud syncing service.
Yes.
And generally speaking, when you install that software on your devices, the software handles the syncing itself, and you aren't supposed to have to worry about it. But as we noted with our previous caller, if you're having internet issues, getting your computers on the internet, if you make a change on one computer, it may not get to the second one.
Uh-huh.
And then if you make a change on that second computer, now there's a syncing conflict and it doesn't know which one to use. And so most of the services will put a lock icon so that it lets you know that something was wrong. Two different computers tried to edit the same document and they don't know which changes to make. So what exactly are you having trouble with syncing?
I think that was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I would be trying to use my Microsoft Word documents, and it was coming up that I couldn't access it through the cloud. So what I've tried to do is to unsync everything, but now I think I've got them all mixed up. I have no idea.
Yeah, that's usually the fix, is to unsync and resync.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be tricky, especially if you're using different syncing services for different things.
Yeah. So if I want to use, would Google Drive be the way to go, the best way to go to sync?
Well, best is always subjective. Google Drive is a very, very popular service. They give you 5 gigabytes for free, and you get more space if you pay more. And it's available on most devices, Mac, Windows, Android, and iOS.
It can be used on the iPad and the iPhone?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So that probably would be your best bet among them all. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if SkyDrive has an iOS version. I know they have a desktop version.
I'm not sure either.
I haven't tried that yet. But yeah, Google Drive or even Dropbox. But Dropbox only gives you 2 gigs for free, and you pay more. Or if you refer other people to Dropbox, you can get free space. But for Word files, generally they aren't very big, so yeah. You don't need to worry about how much space you're using.
So I do have Dropbox. Does
okay.
that interfere with Google Drive?
No, it's just two programs that do the same thing.
Well, I could put certain things in Dropbox, and it won't be connected with the other ones.
That's right. Right. They're not interchangeable.
Yeah, I don't think you can make the same folder both Dropbox and Google Drive.
I don't think
so. It has
so.
To be separate folders.
Okay. I've got a window up now, and it says Google Cloud Connect, and there was choices, automatic backup, and I unclicked that and clicked manual backup just so it wouldn't be doing all these things. Same
yeah, time. Google Cloud Connect is an old service that they don't use anymore.
Oh.
And that may be why you're getting errors.
That must be.
Yeah. As of April 13th, 2013, you can no longer use Cloud Connect.
I think that's...
That's probably when your problem started?
Yes. And
probably
told me to connect something new, and I don't dare to add anything.
Right. It tells you, we'll post a link in a minute, but there's a document from Google on how to switch your Cloud Connect service into the Google Drive service.
Okay.
Which is what they replaced it with.
Yeah. And that sounds like that would be the best path for you.
Okay. All right. That's good.
Yep.
Good.
Well, there's one more question. And
go ahead.
Disable protected view for document sync with Google Docs. Should I check that off?
Protected view.
Oh, wait a minute. That's that Google Cloud thing. Never mind.
Okay.
I'm just going to get rid of all that.
Yeah. So my fear is now that Google Cloud is discontinued, will you be able to switch to Google Drive?
Well, you may be able to get things out, but maybe not put anything new in it.
It says log out of Cloud Connect, uninstall Cloud Connect. Install Google Drive. So you may not, be able to log out, but it won't matter because it's not there anymore. So you have to uninstall Cloud Connect from your computer, and then you can install Google Drive, and it will pick up from there.
Uninstall Google...
Cloud Connect.
Cloud. Okay.
And then install Google Drive.
Install Google.
And we've posted a link on our website at soundbites.org. on how to migrate from Google Cloud Connect to Google Drive.
That's Bytes with a Y.
Spell it out for me again.
S-O-U-N-D.
O-U-N-D.
B-Y-T-E-S.
E-Y-T-E-S?
Yeah, B.
Oh, B.
Yeah.
Okay.
Y-T-E-S.org.
.org. Okay, now I'm looking at my laptop, and it says iCloud Backup, and I'm not able to get into my iPad anymore. It must be the same reason then.
That may be something else.
Well, I don't think Cloud Connect had an iPad version, but Google Drive does. But the iCloud backup is a separate issue.
Okay.
That's a service from Apple that will back up the contents of your iPad to the cloud. So if your iPad gets lost or you lose an application or lose some of your photos, okay. You can restore that backup from the iCloud.
Okay, now it says this pad hasn't been backed up in 5 weeks. Backup happened when this iPad's plugged in, locked, and connected to the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, you can choose to back up your iPad to iCloud through the internet, but it has to be plugged into power and connected to your Wi-Fi network for that backup to happen. Or you can plug the iPad into your computer, and it will back up to your computer. So
I do have it. Right now I've got it.
Yeah, so if you're plugging it into your computer to back up, then you don't necessarily need the iCloud backup.
But it won't. Okay.
Well, so when iCloud isn't backing up, it's going to tell you that. Annoyingly, it doesn't tell you because you're backing up to your computer.
Right.
But I haven't been able to get into the iPad because I can't get rid of that. I say okay, and then it doesn't let me do anything.
Well, you can always reboot the iPad, hold down both the sleep button and the home button. So the button on the top right and the button on the front center, hold them both down for about 10 seconds and the iPad will reboot and you'll see the Apple logo as it starts up again.
Okay, now tell me where it is again.
The sleep button on the top right.
Top right.
And the home button in the front center.
Front center, okay.
Yeah, push them both at the same time and the iPad will reboot.
You have to hold them down.
Hold them down, right. Push and hold both of them down.
And eventually you'll see a red slider that comes to the top of the screen. When you slide that off...
That's the shutdown if you only hold one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, do normal shutdown first, I suppose. So press and hold the sleep button at the top.
Now everything went off.
That's, okay, good.
Is the sleep button the black one that's right at the top?
Yep.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, if you press and hold that, you'll get a slider asking if you want to turn off, and that's one way to turn the iPad off. Or if you press and hold both the sleep button and the home button at the same time, it will force it to reboot.
Now the Apple just came on.
Okay, so now, yeah, it's rebooting, and hopefully that will get you back into where you're going.
Oh, that's good. I might have got one step further. Okay, thank you.
You're all righty. You're very welcome.
Okay, bye.
Yep, bye-bye. So, yeah, sometimes so many companies have cloud services that it's often confusing as to which service you're using different things.
They're all competing with each other, and they all want you to completely invest in their infrastructure. Apple wants you to use all Apple stuff. Google would prefer that you use all Google stuff. And the problem is, each of those companies is really good at one portion of it, but they're not always as good at everything. And they don't seem to realize that.
Right. There was a lot of... talk a few months, a few years ago, Apple had a cloud syncing service called iDisk.
Right.
But that was before we called it cloud syncing. It was an internet disk.
Yeah.
It didn't work very well. The concept was great. Anything you put on this disk shows up on all of your computers.
Right.
And then a company called Dropbox came around and actually did it right.
Yeah. Yeah. It actually worked the way you would expect it to work.
You put something in your Dropbox folder and that same file shows up automatically in all your other stuff.
And Google said, we like you. We're just going to buy you out now.
Yeah. So there were a lot of people who were saying Apple should have bought Dropbox.
I think they tried.
They tried. Yeah, apparently the story was they offered like $800 million and Dropbox guys said no.
No, that's not enough.
That's not enough.
We'd rather do this. We don't want to be a feature of whatever you're doing next. But amazing how excited we all got when some company finally got something as simple as keeping files synchronized. Right.
There have been third-party programs for a long time. There's one called SugarSync, and it's always been a little tricky.
Syncing is a difficult problem.
Right. And some of it is because we didn't have ubiquitous internet for a long time. It was dial-up internet. So you dialed up and you only connected for a few minutes and then you hung up. And then some of the early broadband internet services weren't as effective as we'd hoped.
Yeah.
And it got a little tricky for the software to figure out what had changed. And if two people changed the same file on different computers at the same time, which one is the right change?
Yeah, and the computer can't figure that out. The best it can do is present both to you at the same time and say, which parts of this are correct? And then let a human make that choice.
So Google Drive does offer multi-user editing. So the same person can be editing the document, which is a little freaky to watch because as you're typing something...
Right. A different cursor appears somewhere else in the document and it can also be typing or moving around or deleting things.
And it's always funny when you have two people arguing over the same sentence.
Yeah.
No, it should say this and then it changes.
They rewrite it.
You write it again. So you type it the way you want it. They type it the way they want and you're fighting over the same sentence.
And that's kind of a unique feature. I don't think a lot of other online word processing programs have that.
Yeah.
I know that there was one called SubEthaEdit for the Mac a number of years ago, and that was for people on local networks, not for people across the internet. But in general, these cloud services, boy, they sure are confusing to a lot of my clients. And in general, I don't think a lot of my clients really need them. Mm-hmm. They hear about them and they see all the marketing related to them. But for day-to-day use, I still think saving stuff on your local computer, keeping a separate backup copy on a separate drive, and potentially using a product like CrashPlan to get it out of your house is really the best way to go.
Right. And for a lot of, especially small businesses, it's common to have your own server locally.
Right.
And that's where you store your stuff.
Uh-huh.
And if you want, you can call that your cloud.
Yes.
Because it's stored, it's all of your stuff stored in one place.
Right. And the whole reason why we call it cloud to begin with comes back to
Internet's too many syllables.
Yeah. Network administrators, when they would draw diagrams of how their networks worked, you would always concentrate on your local stuff, and then you draw a line out and you'd, you know, write internet on it and encircle that in a cloud shape. And so I'm sure some high up muckety-muck CEO saw that and said, well, can't we just turn that into a product? And hence the word cloud was born. Yep. But just whenever you hear the word cloud, replace it with someone else's server on the other side of the internet. And that will help demystify it for you.
Yep. And every company wants to have its own cloud services. And so you get to try them all. Unfortunately, they all have free versions, and see what you like.
Right.
All righty. Let's go back to the phones now. We've got Don from Hilton. How you doing, Don? What can we do for you today?
Good. Well, I just wanted to make an additional comment to your earlier comments about charges outside the country.
Yes.
I discovered that I got charged, I think, $3 or something for internet data usage on my phone, and I didn't even use the phone, because one doesn't realize that your phone goes out and does some data, your smartphone does some data transfer updates and things.
Yeah, I went to Toronto in March, and I went up there with my Sprint phone, and I went up there and I selected Sprint International, which gives you international data and whatnot.
Yeah, if you know you're going to use it.
My mother was up there with me, and she's like, okay, so you got that on. I'm like, yeah. She's like, how much does that cost? I'm like, well, it should only cost this much. Well, she called up Sprint up there, and after about 2 seconds of talking with the Sprint representative, she's like, shut it off right now, quick, shut it off.
Yeah,
it's
going to
cost you X amount of money a month, and it's ridiculous, and me go insane. I'm like, all right, well, it's much for that, I guess.
My phone would work in Canada, but I don't. The biggest thing is you can go into your settings, wireless settings, and say no wireless transfer when roaming.
Right, turn off roaming. Turn off data roaming, because there's voice roaming. Voice roaming and data roaming separately.
Yeah.
If you know you're going to be out of the country, out of your home country, and still want to use your cellular, you can get international roaming packages.
I did that when I went to South America.
Yeah. Uh-huh. If you buy it ahead of time as a package, it's much cheaper than the incidental roaming charges you get for a one-off.
And one more thing people should be very careful of is with smartphones, you have a real tendency to use the GPS.
Yep.
And that uses data. So be sure, the safest thing is when you're out of the country, turn your stupid phone off.
Leave your phone at home.
Especially if you don't know how to get in there and turn off the data transfers while roaming.
A lot of business travelers will do that. When you get to the airport of wherever you're going, you buy a cheap SIM card, a prepaid phone, and you know, $20. I'll use this phone for a week, and that's the end of it.
Yeah. Right. So I mean, I just thought it's a warning, because I'm relatively sophisticated about this sort of thing, but I didn't even think about the fact that the phone will do some transferring. Yep.
Check for updates.
Even if I don't turn the phone on.
Yeah.
So either turn your power off, or go in there and turn the.
Yeah. Make sure you turn off roaming.
But I just thought you were talking about that. That was a point I felt that was missed.
Yes, yes, it was. Thank you very much, Don.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's a big thing that people don't often realize. Most cell data plans in the U.S. have a cap on them. Typically, it's 5 gigabytes a month for cellular, which isn't bad because you don't do too much video watching on your cell phone. Right. But your phone will check for updates. The apps check for updates and all sorts of things like that. So it's good to keep that in mind. All righty, here we are, about 20 minutes of. We've got to listen to a few more sponsors here. We've got time for a couple more calls, so give us a call, 1-800-790-0415 or 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, I'm Jim McGrath, host of the Blues Spectrum. I hope you can tune in this Sunday evening from 7 until 9 for some of the best blues around here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to Soundbites here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We're going into our last segment here, and I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Woden.
And let's get right back to the phone, see if we can get a few more calls through to the end of the hour. We've got Dave calling from Canandaigua. What can we do for you today, Dave?
Well, I just called in to make a comment on this beautiful afternoon.
Yeah.
Being a cynical user of computers myself, and I'm somewhat amused by the buzzwords which come along and everybody gets all excited. And I wanted to do a little clarification on the term cloud.
Go ahead.
You know, I won't get into the atmospheric chemistry or whatever, you know, it's just water vapor up there. But what happens is when a cloud gets down low enough to the ground where we actually live, it's called fog.
Okay.
Good point.
And I think that's a good name for all this stuff.
Fog computing, yes.
Yeah. And that's all I had to say for today. Thanks.
Good, thanks.
Here is Google Fog.
Yeah. Yes, right. I think that's what they intended. When, by the time you understand it well enough to bring it down to the people, it's confusing for everybody there. So you're stuck in the fog. I think that's more apt than I originally thought.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Thanks, Dave. We'll have to remember that in the future.
I see it's a bumper computer sticker or a T-shirt or something in my email signature or something. So it's like we've got Joanne from Greece on the phone
from
next.
Greece?
Yes, I talked to you before.
Yes, oh, yeah. Come on back.
Well, I have the last two calls. I have decided the fog is what he's talking about. It's what I'm in.
Uh-huh.
And I only want Ancestry.com and my family tree sync together. So I'm going to get rid of all the other one and keep my stuff on like I normally used to do.
Right, on your local computer.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good move.
Yeah. So I did have a quick question. Before they told us Java was bad and it was infected, is that something we still do not want to download?
That's a hard question to answer. Some websites require Java. Mm-hmm.
Ancestry.com
might be one of them. But Java is frequently updated because bad guys are finding holes.
Mm-hmm.
So the good guys update it. So when you get a Java update, you should install it. One of the things that we sort of wish is that Java is a programming language that was meant for computers. It was never meant for the web.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere along the way, someone, Sun Microsystems, who made Java to begin with, made it available to websites, and that gave the website too much power that they can run programs on your local computer. Some of the more advanced programs, I know with some of the remote screen sharing programs, like Go to My PC and Log Me In, often use Java. And then some legitimate programs like OpenOffice and NeoOffice, some of the free Office suites are written in Java. The nice thing about Java from a programming standpoint is it runs on Mac and Windows and Unix simultaneously, so you don't have to write three different versions of your program.
Mm-hmm.
But that also means the bad guys can do that too.
Yeah.
So what some people are doing is uninstalling Java from their computer, or at least in your browser, go into your browser preferences and turn off Java.
Okay.
And then see if websites don't work. If you go to a website that says it needs Java, then you'll have to turn it on for that website.
Okay.
But many websites are not using Java, just like they're not using Flash, which has similar problems with the bad guys.
Okay.
And when an update comes, it needs to be installed to protect you from the holes that have been found.
Yeah.
But if you turn it off and uninstall it, then you may not need it. The websites you go to may not need that.
Yep. Okay. That's what I'm going to do then. All right. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
And just to make matters a little more confusing, JavaScript is completely different.
Yeah.
Is it?
And yes,
Java is to JavaScript as ham is to hamster, or as car is to carpet.
Yep. And JavaScript is virtually necessary on every website.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you turn off JavaScript, and most websites quit working. So that is necessary, but Java itself is not necessary. In fact, the guys Oracle now that own Java, they tried not the other way around. The JavaScript guys renamed it.
Okay.
And nobody cares because it's JavaScript.
Right.
Nobody's going to use the new name.
I need JavaScript, but I probably don't really need
Java itself.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for giving us a call.
Now the cloud today.
Yeah.
Enjoy the sun.
Goodbye. Yeah, go out and check.
Yep.
So if you do have Java installed, or don't know if you do or not, you can go to javatester.org and test what version of Java is installed in your computer. And that also that website also keeps track of all the bugs that are found in Java takes you to links to update your Java. But in general, you don't need Java in your browser. You may need it on your computer if you're running a program like OpenOffice or one of its brethren. But you probably don't need Java in your computer. Now I use one of my security camera programs uses Java, so
yeah,
I have to have it in mine.
Yeah, and Java, at least on your computer, you'll also need for a lot of backup services, too.
Yeah.
I know CrashPlan makes use of that.
Yep.
I did get a chance to meet with some CrashPlan representatives at a conference recently, and they tell me that a version, at least for the Mac, that doesn't require Java is due out soon. They were saying probably by the end of the year. So we are anxiously awaiting that for those of us who are administrators so that we don't have to enable Java on all of the client machines that we deal with.
Yep. And CrashPlan is an offsite backup program.
Yeah, it's really, really helpful. It's really useful, not terribly expensive, and it creates an additional copy of files that you care about automatically without you having to think about it, and it puts them in any number of places that you specify. So they can go to a different folder on your computer. They can go to a different drive that happens to be connected to your computer. Or they can go up to these CrashPlan servers on the other side of the internet that are available for a small fee. And this is fantastic because then if somebody comes in to your home and steals your computer, they're probably also going to take the backup drive with it. And that means that your information, all your digital photos, unless you've got them stored somewhere else, they're gone. So having them stored someplace else, like up at a cloud services, is a fantastic thing to do. Not terribly expensive, and it's very useful.
Yeah, fire, flood, natural disaster, you know, some people have their evacuation plan to grab the backup hard drive.
Yeah. Yeah, it used to be you'd grab the photo album.
The photo album, right, no, grab your backup hard drive, yeah.
Quick, grab all the computers!
Yeah.
Quick!
The computers are harder to carry, but that backup drive is probably small and easy to carry.
Right.
So some people even use two backup drives,
and
they'll alternate back and forth between work, and that's your off-site backup. But it's nice to have one of the automatic services like CrashPlan or Carbonite.
Right, yeah, swapping those back and forth, we call that using SneakerNet. And that's kind of the cheap and cheerful way to get redundant offsite storage. But a built-in tool that handles that for you automatically is fantastic. Now, if you've got a lot of stuff to move, pushing that out of your high-speed data connection, even though it says it's high-speed, may still take days and days, depending upon how much stuff you've got. But once it is moved, it really only synchronizes and sends up things that have changed. So it'll only send up the new photos or the new documents you've written or changed versions of your existing documents. And they've gotten very good at figuring out what's changed and only sending that because they've got to receive it at their end too, and they've got bandwidth costs to consider. So they're trying to make that as tight as they can.
Yep. So it's nice to be able to have that peace of mind that if something goes wrong in your house or fire, flood, theft, anything like that, you're going to have that backup copy on someone else's computer that that you can get back to.
Right.
And most of them also have a web interface. So say you're at a friend's house and, mm-hmm. oh, what was that file I need? You can log into your backup online service, yep. and find that file.
And get it from your tablet or your phone as well, at least with CrashPlan. I know that much. That's the one that I have the most experience with, and that's why I mentioned, yep. that particular one.
Now, they have a service where you can send them your hard drive, right?
Yeah, if you have the residential plan, then you can have them mail you a drive, fill it up, and send it to them, which saves on a lot of time that you would spend pushing your data up to them.
Alrighty. So that music tells us that we're at the end. We made it. We're at the end of another another hour, our final hour today. I'd like to really thank my guest today, Dennis Wurster.
Thank you.
For running the board today.
Yeah.
I haven't seen George come through yet, but I'm assuming he's out there because he's coming up next, or we might have a third hour. we'll see you all next week. Hopefully Dick and Dave will be back. Those guys with us. And we are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1, and we'll see you all next week.